Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Press that button.
Press that button. Let's go, Robert.
Press that button.
Yes.
All right. Well, we just had a little pre. I wish that was recorded, but it's not. It's okay. I'm eating bacon. Okay. I'm having breakfast. Breakfast with Adam. I mean, what more do I want?
Robert, where are you right now?
I'm in Savannah, Georgia.
And why are you in Savannah, Georgia?
I like it here.
Okay. See, this is what I'm talking about, Robert. Like we've talked about this before on the pad or the pod. Sorry, not the pad. It's nice to have a home, but it's also nice to be nomadic. So we're kind of living the best of both lives. Me, obviously, at home, domesticated. You, flying by the seat of your pants. You know, good for us.
I was I was in Dallas right before this and filming. So I was able to film one day of Drive, Dink, and Dine, the show I'm doing at the Grapevine Chicken and Pickle. It's a brand new one they just built. It's their biggest one so far. And then we're supposed to shoot the next day at Grand Prairie, but big ice storm came through. All the flights got canceled, but I was like one of just a few flights that got out. What was it, yesterday or the day before? 2 days ago. And then I was meant to fly to Charleston, but then I was like, you know what? I'll fly to Jacksonville. I just wanted to get a flight out nonstop out of DFW, and I was able to get a flight, early flight out of DFW to Jacksonville. But yeah, so anyways, I'm in Savannah. I was at Jalen's club yesterday, played a little pickle with Rafa Ray, understood a fourth of what he was talking about. You know, just,
oh, dude. But he was talking loudly.
When you very loudly and very animated loud. And very like passionate. Hey, when you get on, if you get on the boat, you don't get off the boat.
Yeah, if you get on the boat, you don't get off the boat. Rafa, you would do. I mean, Rafa Ray, I love that guy. Used to play some tournaments, teaching down in Savannah with Jalen, and we love that place as well. Drivable for Corinne and myself, so it's very nice to get down to Savannah. Very hospitable people. Very, very nice time down there. Usually have a alcohol/food hangover when I leave that place, but it's all good, Rob.
Yeah. No, and the club's gotten nicer. They have like a little outdoor bar area now.
Oh yeah.
And which is also like on, I don't remember what hole that is. So maybe the 10th tee. That might be the turn. But Jalen was just like, yeah, when we have like events here, I mean, this place is just packed. You know, it's like almost like waste management, the Phoenix golf tournament, where people are just like screaming at the people teeing off. Yes. Like it's just an epic environment. It's cool.
Yeah. And if you want a blueprint for how to grow a pickleball club, the Savannah Golf Club, Jalen Brennan, very nice job from no pickleball courts and tennis people hating pickleball to it being a huge, probably the biggest part of their club now. Well done, Savannah Golf Club, for making that happen. And yeah, we were down there. Whatever, a couple weeks ago, the bar, they got the bathrooms over there. They got the I don't know what that is, pergola overhang. It's a great pergola. Spot to place. Is that a word?
I think that's a word. Okay. I was just impressed that you used it. Well done.
Yeah. Well, you know, I surprise every now and then. And I'll tell you what, Robert, we have a lot to talk about this MLP recap. It's about 60 degrees in this office. I'm wearing a sweatshirt. I think it's 50-50 whether I sweat through it, because I'm excited about this episode.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover. Before we jump headfirst into it, so I told you a little bit about Drive, Dink, and Dine. So that's being supported by Selkirk, basically. So I'm getting to show up at these venues. They have a videographer come out. It's awesome. They're super supportive. They're helping that. They're helping this podcast. So they're really investing heavily into content in pickleball, and grateful to have them as a sponsor of this pod, and grateful to be using their paddle. I'm starting to, now that I use the Halo, man, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Good stuff. And yeah, I know they really are. They're going after the content creation scene. I know they've signed. I know Ignatowicz has his new podcast. I know The Breeze. If you don't know The Breeze, Jordan The Breeze Briones, he's got a podcast. And, of course, you know, his little teaching primetime pickleball thing. So they're really going after it outside the lines as well as inside the lines. And I think it's a good move to kind of corner that market. And, you know, they got a lot of tools at their disposal, and they're helping out the content creator. So kudos to Selkirk.
Adam, did you know
yes.
Our podcast got an award?
I did. I just saw the NML. Was that not – that's what they thought. That's not the real awards. So we actually got it?
It's whatever award we want to follow. And NML awarded us their favorite podcast, the best podcast.
Okay, good.
It was us and MacGuffin. I love MacGuffin. I think his podcast production quality is probably slightly higher than ours. But, you know, Adam, when you have on camera chemistry with your co-host, that's you can't fight that. You can't fight chemistry, Adam.
That's right. And Tyson has his co-host is his wife. So if we have more chemistry than that, what does that say? Just joking. It was actually really great to see Tyson and some of the other guys and gals I hadn't seen in a while at this MLP this last weekend. Yeah. So, yeah, always have some love for Tyson. We go a long way back. So, yeah, great podcast. And, you know, maybe we need to up our – I need a little – area, maybe get some better equipment here, you know, show off my wonderful voice and pretty face a little bit better than I have been. So either way, it's good stuff.
Blue eyes that your mama loves.
She said, I mean, decent percentage of our viewers are women. We got it. We can't have glasses on at the podcast, you know? I mean, I get it, Mom.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. All right, MLP recap. We have so much to cover in respect to MLP and everything that went down. We also have a PPA this weekend, Desert Ridge, which, you know, deep fields now, a lot of PPA signed players, and it's going to be interesting to watch. But let's, I know you got a long list for MLP. Let's just do it.
Yeah. So let's just start off with you, Rob. So, tell me a little bit about your weekend. You were on the Brooklyn Aces with Corinne Carr, yourself, CGL, Sierra Gaetan Leach, and Greg Dow. I know you guys had a little bit of a slow start, but seemed to be playing better as the weekend progressed. You made it through to the quarterfinals where you played the Utah Black Diamonds, and we'll get to a slight controversy in that match here in a little bit. But tell me a little bit about your weekend.
Hey, MLP is always a blast, right? And I love that the Aces ownership group and our GM Samin, like, they hooked up a great Airbnb. I know you spent some time over there, some nights over there. They were super supportive and they were just good people. And it was really nice to connect with them, get to know them more. It was like, we've always talked about this, like the ownership group should help out the players, especially like Challenger. There's not a lot of money to be made per se. And if we don't have support and help, like we're going to be losing money going to that event. So to have some expenses covered and stuff like that was a huge help. Big shout out to those guys. And it was just that environment's fun where you get to just be in a house with your teammates, get to know them better. Because that doesn't always happen at tournaments. Even if you've played with somebody before, you're not necessarily spending off time with them at these events. So it's always just really cool to get to know people better and connect with them. I mean, I tell you what, Greg Dow, that dude's going to be an internet sensation. We're talking about like one of the most ridiculous characters, not just in pickleball, but that I've ever met. That dude once he gets going, he's fun to be around because he's so energetic and passionate. And I like Greg Dow a lot.
Yeah. It was, like you said, I spent some time in that house, and Robert, we had a pretty serious documentary crew following around the Brooklyn Aces, the same crew that worked on the Dion Prime documentary on Amazon Prime. So they were following around a few teams, obviously following around you guys with two pregnant ladies and a couple other characters on the team. So tell me a little bit about that experience. You know, it was pretty serious, man. You got some heavy duty cameras. You got the guy with the sound thing putting it over there, just kind of going through your day with the crew around you. How was that experience?
Yeah, I going into the event, like I knew there was like, I did an hour phone call with those guys before the event. So talked a little bit about my story and, you know, my journey in pickleball, that whole deal. And, but going into it, I didn't know that we'd be spending as much time with them as we did. I didn't know we'd be mic'd up during matches, that whole deal. So, before our first match, 30 minutes, like we're about to warm up, they're like, "Hey, yo, can we mic you?" And I'm like, "Okay." Like, it's just a little distracting, right? But it is what it is, because I talk about it all the time. Content's almost more important than results these days in pickleball, because that's, it's what can get eyeballs. It's what can grow your brand. It's what you need to get better sponsors is more eyeballs on you as a player. So, you know, to me, it's like a non-negotiable. You have to do it. Like if somebody's willing to mic you up and create content around you, then you have to do it. And it's, I feel like it's very important in terms of like growing as a player and, you know, being able to generate more eyeballs on you so you get more sponsorships. So it was no big deal. It wasn't like, I remember the first MLP we were mic'd up at some of the matches. That was, for whatever reason, you know, more uncomfortable. Like these mics didn't really bother me. They didn't really affect me. So, but yeah, I mean, having them be on court during matches, like, you know, I'm watching the ladies cheering for them and, you know, cameras on me, a little different, just a little mm-hmm. different. But, yeah, it was a unique experience. I think it's, those guys do an amazing job in terms of creating, you know, telling stories and creating content. So it will be really exciting to see kind of how that plays out and how, you know, what the edited product looks like.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I've had some decent wins as a player. No one gives a damn, Rob. Nobody gives a damn about any of that at all. That's why I have to continue to bring it up. But yeah. I mean, to get the podcast, do some of the high end content creation. I mean, I got a lot of people saying, hey, thanks for sharing your story, doing this, doing that, putting that out there. So it you're absolutely right. I think it's just as, if not more important than some of your on-court results, kind of telling those stories and having that outside the lines perspective and it makes a lot of sense. And when we have some of the stories that we have, it's good stuff and the people want to know that. So we always try to balance that out here on the podcast as well, giving results, giving recaps, but trying to put some personal spin on it about our personalities and whatever else. So I think both are important and, you know, it's just the day and age that we live in. It's not really an option if you want to, whatever they like to call it, grow your brand or whatever that is. So, interesting. I don't know. Did they give you any form of timeline when they could possibly put this out? Are they going to be at the other two events in this first season? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I don't know all the details about, you know, when they're, you know, going to cut this up and put it out there. But I know they're going to be at Daytona. They're going to be the next two events for sure. So I'm guessing maybe they'll do like a season one little docuseries based on season one and kind of track us from Arizona to Daytona to where's the third one at?
San Clemente. So San Clemente, yeah. The third event of the first season and the second season will both be at San Clemente. So whatever season ending tournament, whatever you want to call it. So that's where it will be. So yeah, no, it's very cool. And, you know, they got a lot of footage just, you know, at the team dinners and outside the lines as opposed to on the court as well. And I think that whole package is what really kind of carries it, and when you can have both of those, it's intriguing to the fans.
I know they were also following. They followed three teams. They followed our, I think, three teams, maybe four. But I know they followed Florida Smash as well, which is mm-hmm. you know Travis's team, and then also the Hustlers, which was Tyson and Rafa Anna Lacey. So and that was good because they had some great results and got to the finals, right? So. So you have, you know, we didn't do great as a team. I mean, a little challenging with a couple pregnant ladies.
No, really. I mean, you made it through though. So there was one and two
somehow on pool play.
Yeah. So this is how it works. So point differential percentage was a big factor and several teams, the Hustlers also went 1-2. They started their first day 0-2 and were able to come back after a little help from another team and getting a high point differential percentage. So there's a lot of ways to go 2-0 and not make it and go 0-2 and make it. So it was pretty spicy. Almost looked very bleak for a couple teams and they were able to eke it out and make it to the quarterfinals. All you got to do is make it. So
very true.
Yeah. So it created a lot of buzz and a lot of, you know, intrigue that you can be successful early on or fall flat on your face starting off the tournament and still have a way and an avenue to make it through those elimination rounds. So, Robert, a slightly different perspective for me. I was in the commentary booth for the entirety of MLP. I had done that once before because of a calf injury last year, and it was a really great experience. Much different. You're actually kind of isolated because I'm in the booth the whole time. If I get any extra time, I'm kind of running to the restroom or trying to grab food. So when you're down there as a player, you have lots of off time in between matches. You're a little more in the mix, in the players' lounge, kind of getting the vibe of how everyone's feeling about the tournament and this and that. So it was a different perspective. And I tell you what, a lot of respect to Michelle McMahon, Cameron Irwin, Cameron Blackwood. I believe it was Dom and Shad, Morgan Evans, and Brandon Insectpong. When you're out there for 8 hours a day for 4 hours straight, having to come up with, you know, good things to say about all these situations and whatever, it is very taxing. So a lot of respect to those guys. I've only done this maybe 10 or 12 times and never the amount of hours that many days in a row. So those guys that are out there week in and week out, lots of respect and a shout out to them, because it is very difficult. I found myself staring at the wall. My brain was mush afterwards. I wanted, people were going, having dinner, having a good old time. I just want to go home and eat something and go to sleep. So it was definitely some real work out there. I felt like I had some glimpses of my A game, and then I would dip down to my C game and then maybe catch a second win. So it's pretty tough in the commentary booth coming up with material that whole time, but it was a very enjoyable experience overall.
Love it. Yeah, I can only imagine. It's got to be tough to maintain that energy throughout the day over 8 hours. You know, the MLP format has to help that a little bit, because you kind of have the excitement and energy built into it, right? Versus like a tournament day where maybe it's just kind of like a ho-hum match. Like, all of these are pretty exciting and pretty intense. So I would imagine that helps on the commentating side a bit.
No, it absolutely does. And it's wild, the difference in energy and just that compared to, you know, a regular tournament where you know it's going to be a grind if you want to even sniff the medal rounds. So to have these scheduled matchups, a little bit shorter format with the rally scoring, it really is different. And I'm sure I sounded like a broken record on the stream, but it really is so different. And MLP, like I said, nothing else like it.
Even if you were a broken record, I tell you what, the people love you. The people love you. Those the comments in the YouTube chat, like, everybody wants Adam Stone on the mic.
I appreciate that.
I'm tooting your horn for you. You don't need to do it today for yourself. Wow. I got you.
Hey, we're only 18 minutes in. We still got some time. I can probably sneak in some tooting.
Thank you,
Robert. I appreciate that. And man, this was crazy. We talked about it previously in the podcast. This format is not figured out yet. How good do your singles team need to be and whatever? The percentage of Dream Breakers was next level this tournament. I believe the figure quoted for Columbus end of last year was 40%. Don't know the exact percentage of Dream Breakers this year, but it had to be over 50. We were constantly having Dream Breakers, and we saw, obviously having a good singles team on paper is fantastic, but we saw all kinds of teams making a splash in the Dream Breaker, good and bad. And it's just so exciting. We had multiple men versus women matchups, and it's a great thing. They trademarked it for a reason. Dream Breakers, very exciting for the fans, the commentators, and the players.
Yeah. No, it was the atmosphere at MLP, filling up that stadium court in Mesa it's a pretty big deal. I mean, I don't know how many people that seats, but I mean, it was standing room only. You had every seat in the bleachers filled. You had people standing trying to get a glimpse. That atmosphere was probably the best atmosphere I've seen in pickleball, probably. What was it? Was it the Fives versus the Hustlers? Was that it?
Yes. That was the
it was a semi, right? No, it was quarter or semi.
That was the semi, and that's when you had the Hustlers setting their lineup first with Tyson McGuffin at number one and Anna Lee Waters choosing to play him. That is just good stuff right there.
Yeah.
When they set their lineup first, and Anna Lee wants Tyson in the number one spot. I mean, that is made for TV situation.
I mean, there are so many good storylines in that one, right? You had Anna Bright playing playing James in mixed.
Yes.
You had you had Leia going against Tyson.
Yes, and not holding anything back.
No.
Anna and James, it was just like, wow. Stare downs, fist pumps, come ons. Like you would have thought maybe she toned it down 10% because it's James. I think she ramped it up 10% or more because it was James. Yes, yeah. And like you said, we had Leia Jansen on this podcast a month or two ago saying that she was going to play this year with Tyson McGuffin, and all of a sudden he's playing with Catherine Parento. No idea the specifics or what happened there, but it's obviously a storyline and something that is there. So you're exactly right. Tons of storylines and lots of reasons to like that matchup, and it did not disappoint on court as well.
Yeah, and I've said this before, man. And you probably have a unique perspective on this being in the booth. But one thing that I always want to know is like when I'm watching a match, like the importance of what's happening, right? Like we got into the match we lost to go 1-2 in our pool play. We lost that, but we thought it was a must win to advance. Mm-hmm. We lost in the Dream Breaker. I believe it was 21-18 or 19 or something. And we were able to still advance, but to know like kind of in real time while that match is going that, okay, if the Aces get to X number of points in the Dream Breaker, they advance or they don't. To know that stuff would be like, I mean, that's just compelling. That's like compelling must watch
sure.
TV. You know what I mean? That's like, everything, the tension builds, everything's on the line. Even as a player, I didn't know, right? I had no idea. Right. I thought like we had to win to advance. Right. But if they knew, for example, and you guys could elaborate, you know, doing the commentary that if this team gets to 18, they move on. If they don't, they don't. And it would create so much good tension that would just be fascinating to watch.
Right. And no, I think you're exactly. Yeah, I'm just going to say you're exactly right. And we knew like percentage, or we could see kind of the point percentage distribution, but we didn't know the actual number of points. And you're exactly right. You guys, I believe, got off to a 2-10 start in that Dream Breaker. And I knew it was something in the like 4-8 point range, but I didn't know exactly what it was. So if you guys don't come back pretty reasonably, there's a very good chance you don't advance. And if we know the exact specifics of the points and you could relay that to the fans, I think it would be very, very palpable how tight and how real everything was. I don't know how realistic that is in terms of live scoring and whatever else, but you're exactly right, Rob. I think if the fans actually knew that, it would make the viewing even that much better.
No, absolutely. And I mean, it brings up an interesting point, right? Like going into this event, like I know the rules were out there and like it was going off point differential, but I didn't, as a player, I didn't know that. As a bad team captain, I didn't know that. But I thought, yeah, I was surprised. Like we lost our first with 3-0. I was like, oh, that was ugly. And I thought we were still going to play the fourth match, the second mixed match. And they were like, no, we're done. And I was it took me by surprise because typically we went by games instead of point differential in the past, I believe. So
yes,
and I think they're going to move back to games, correct? So I just found it interesting that they went off point differential instead of games.
Yeah, right. And I actually flubbed that in the booth as well. So I got a little confused. I misread it as point differential, not point differential percentage.
Right.
So I knew, I read the rules and I knew that they weren't playing the fourth game. And then I saw that point differential and I was like, well, they have to play the fourth game. And I actually said that on air, which was a big mistake. And I got my partner, Cameron Irwin, a little bit in trouble in that regard. So my bad there. But yes, you're exactly right, Rob. I do believe they are going back to obviously matches won, then game differential, and then down to the point differential. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. There was a text message sent out to the MLP players about some changes they're going to make for the next MLP. And I think that's good that they put that out there. I always relate this to fantasy sports or poker. And my buddy and I kind of came up with the perfect rule, a set of rules for our baseball league. and we thought that there was no way anyone could find a loophole or whatever. There's always something that happens. So it doesn't matter how perfect your plan is. Someone's going to find a loophole. Someone's going to take advantage of something. So this is just growing pains and process of getting that perfect set of rules in place. And there was no way it was going to be perfect, given how quickly everything came together. So great job by MLP. A couple days after the event, sending out a message about how they are going to tweak some things that didn't go perfectly. And that's a great job by them. Rob, I see that. Yeah, that was your segue for you to start talking, and you have a mouthful of food. What's up with that, Robert?
Hey, we're having breakfast together, Adam. This is a moment, buddy.
It's a moment.
What I really want is this biscuit right here, but I'm trying biscuits. to bread's messing up my stomach quite a bit, so I'm trying to avoid it. But I love it. Man. I love
it
a lot.
Did you know biscuits are my favorite?
It's my favorite, Adam.
Yeah, they're so good. They're so good. Anyway, so
what's your favorite jam or thing to put on a biscuit?
Well, I will obviously go sweet occasionally, but I'm more of a biscuit sandwich kind of guy.
Yeah.
We have this place here. We have a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit sandwich, and it's just next level. Like every time I eat it, I'm just making noises, oh my God, so good. So I'm a biscuit guy. You put some meat, some egg, and some cheese on there. I mean, if you don't like that, there's something wrong with you.
I like biscuit sandwiches, but to be honest, I would go honey would be my top. Mm-hmm. Just a biscuit with honey. And then two would be apple butter. People from the South don't always know what apple butter is. Apple butter is the bomb. Okay. You know what apple butter is, right?
I mean, I do, but I don't believe I've ever had it before.
What?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Adam, you're in North Carolina now, buddy. You have to get some apple butter. Please do that today. Please.
And some chicken bog. Chicken bog.
I don't know what that is, but apple butter. Get on it. And then third, strawberry jam.
Okay. Yeah, we have this.
Apple butter, strawberry jam.
We have this local place that does like strawberry, blackberry preserves. Like, oh my gosh. It's very expensive, but it's just so good. And it's like dessert. If you get a good jam or a good jelly, it's like dessert. So, I'm all for it. Okay, Robert, next up, we're going to talk a little bit about the referees. And let's be clear here. This is a thankless job. These guys are, getting paid peanuts. They're out there doing what they love. But I do think there was a couple issues with some of the refereeing in this tournament. You can always use the classic line, the best referee is the one that you don't remember. And I think that there was a couple times that a few referees kind of inserted themselves in this format and in this tournament, which, I believe maybe could have been an issue. So one, first off, we'll talk about you. You had your toe on the baseline for a serve during one of your matches. And I just cannot even remember. I'm not sure it has happened where I've seen that called in a tournament. We also had a situation similar, Rob, where we had in a Dream Breaker, we had Tyson McGuffin, who pivoted right on the center line, and they called him over the center line, not over the baseline, over the center line on his serve, called him for that.
That's a tough call from the side of the court to know if you're for sure over the center line. That's tough.
Right.
Because the best angle on that's like, we see it sometimes if you're looking at the court right behind it and you can see that you're right on the center line and you can see if a foot comes over it. But from the side like that, that's a really hard call to make.
Right. And I want to know your perspective. So I would say the center line is a little different. I saw the replay. Your toe was on the baseline.
Were you able to see it at like
point of contact?
Point of contact.
Exactly. So all we had was your foot. All we had was your foot. Exactly.
So who cares where my foot is? Because if I hit the ball before my foot goes over, then it's a non-issue.
Right. And you also have the kind of the weight transfer. When you're on your heel, there's a couple inches of your toe that's not touching the line. And then as you transfer your weight forward, your toe comes down. So without point of contact, that's tough to call. But Rob, how about this? Do you think even though that these were – if the point of contact, your toe was on the line or Tyson crossed the center line. Do you think given how infrequently, almost never, that this is called, that it should possibly be relayed to the players from the from the referee that they are creeping close to this situation? And if it happens again, it's going to have to be called. What do you think about that?
To be honest, it doesn't bother me that it was that I lost a point on that. What bothers me is that that's such a hard call to make, and to be so to make that call, you have to be so certain that I was on the line at point of contact, which
right.
I just feel like that's really hard to do. Same with Tyson being across the center line, and that's such a hard call to make. And my issue with it is that it doesn't really give. Like, I'm not hitting bomb serves, right? Like, I think the bigger issue is the waist thing, right? Like, why are we seeing if a toe's on the line and making such a judgment call on that when, you know, the bigger advantage serving is point of contact and whether you're hitting down on it or not. You know, that's the bigger issue. So why are we looking at these weird issues of center line and maybe the toe is on the line at point of contact? Like, so I don't mind losing the point, but it has to be like a very obvious call.
Yes. That's well said. And yeah, it's tough because the rules are the rules. I mean, I'm a rule guy. That's why they're in place. But when there's a little gray area or it's something, like I said, that is just never called ever. I mean, I'm talking like 150, 175 tournament sample size that I've played in my whatever 5 or 6 year career. And I've never seen it called before, and it's called you were in just a general point of your game, which isn't
I challenge it. It was one two. I was serving at 1-2.
Wow. So early, and you lose your challenge. Tyson was in a dream breaker when it was called on him. No relay from the ref, just saying, "Hey, Tyson, you're a little tight on the center line. Be careful. I'm going to have to call it." So I think that that's just something a little wild given the moment that was called, even though technically it was the correct call. There has to be some form of communication in my opinion. Maybe the correct call. Okay, that's fair. So
you think the more reasonable thing would be for the ref to just give a heads up, hey, careful there, you're getting close to it. If I see it again, I'll have to call it.
Right. That's what I think. And I know that is gray area and a little bit dicey, but man, it's just so hard given the moment. You've never been called ever in your career. And then there's, you know, a little piece or you're creeping close to the line, or Tyson on the sideline. I think you got to give him a heads up, or you had just have to call it a little more consistently. And then it'll be in the mind of the player as opposed to just kind of jumping out there in a big spot and calling it. That's really, really dicey to me.
Dude, and if you think about it, like, this isn't a regular tournament. Like, if you get called on that on your serve, you lose a point. You don't just lose your serve, right? Like, you're down a point, and that's a big deal. And not only that, but it's just strange that, like, at the PPA, right, like, the whole Jay and Tyson debacle with Jay cracking serves from his shoulder. It's like, and it went in, so he didn't lose the serve on that. He just had to reserve, right? So, like, okay, we're doing reserves on something ridiculous like that when a toe might be on the line, might not be in the line. You're going to lose a point on that, and actually lose a point because it's rally scoring and not side out scoring.
No, that's a really good point. Actually, I didn't really think of it that way, but very, very true. And then, of course, Rob, we had the split step heard around the world from James Ignatowicz. And this is another situation to me where it's clear in the rules that there's a hindrance and then there's a distraction. Okay. And we saw it often kind of on some YouTube videos when we used to have those 140 ball cross court dink rallies between women and mixed doubles. And then you have the guy sitting down or the guy waving his paddle,
turning around backwards.
Yeah. Turning around backwards. The famous Kyle Yates one. So there is a real distraction. I know sometimes Dave Weinbach kind of waves his paddle when he's not getting the ball or something like that.
Yeah.
But James Ignatowicz even said it. He's a psychopath out there.
His feet are
constant. His feet are constant. He's on his toes doing crazy footwork. He's split stepping hard, whether it's the back of the court, in the mid court, or even at the kitchen line like we saw. So to make that call in that moment, I don't know what it was. It was like 18, 16, or 19, 17 or something like that. To make that call without delivering some form of warning to him, because he's obviously been doing it the whole match.
Yeah, it wasn't like an outlier.
Yeah, it's not like he just
out of nowhere does it. Like,
yeah,
he's been doing it every point.
Right. He's not walking to the kitchen line and then at 17, 19 does a hard split step. That's what he does. So you have to relay that to him and say, hey, be careful. You can hear a pin drop on these points. You're split stepping hard. I've seen your opponent react a little bit to that split step. You got to calm it down or I'm going to have to call it. You have to relay that to him. Yeah. You can't just wait till 19, 17 or whatever it was and then call a distraction on a split step. So yeah, definitely some gray area in these calls, but man, they're just in such big spots. Something's got to change.
Yeah. And my issue with that is, that clip kind of went everywhere. Everybody kind of saw that.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And it's a pretty bad look for pickleball, in my opinion. When stuff like that's being called, like you have tennis players looking at that clip going like, what is pickleball? Why? Like really? You can't split step? Like, It's a little bit of a bad look for the sport. Sure. And it's just like an unnecessary call, right? It's like, I get like by the rule book, right? Like he could call that and he did.
Right.
Because it is distracting. It is a big split step and he did it kind of right when she was hitting, which is when you're supposed to split step. So I see it both ways. I don't necessarily hate the call. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like it is within his right to make that call. But at the same time, I 100% agree that like you have to just pull James over, say, look, this is, you know, if you keep doing it like that, like I might have to call this. Right. But like, mm-hmm. you can't just to call it in a big spot. First one that that's the first split step hindrance I've ever seen. I don't know if you've seen it before. So to do it in such a big match at that point in time, you just can't do it. And I think they ended up replaying the point, right?
I believe that is correct. Yes. Yeah, but Rob, that's it's a great point. You led me right into it. I've never seen the toe on the line, your instance. I've never seen the crossing the center line, which I think actually happens a decent amount.
I think it does too. Yeah.
And then I've never seen the hard split step. So how are we? How in my 175 tournaments have I never seen that? And then an MLP, the biggest tournament of ever in pickleball, probably up until this point, have all three of those gotten called. So it can't be perfect, but man, it feels like it could have been better, you know?
But why are we looking at weird little nuances, and why aren't these refs watching the lines like a hawk, right? Because that's another issue, Adam, like that we'll go right into is line calls. Like there were a lot of overrules. A lot of calls got overturned after review. And like the same kind of point as last year is like, you can make these calls. We're playing for real money now. You can mm-hmm. make these calls without being penalized. So why wouldn't you call a ball out if you're like that hungry to win, right? Like, sure. I don't agree. Like, be honest, have integrity, make the right call. Mm-hmm. But not everybody's going to do that, Adam. So we got to have something.
For sure.
Like when I talk to people about like pro pickleball, they're like, hold on, you call your own lines. It's the honor system when you're playing for real money. You have a $5 million purse and you're making your own calls. What? It just puts a big onus on the players, right? And to make the right call, which is it's a difficult thing for some.
No, absolutely true. And let's be clear: when there's one referee, they have no shot. They're focused on the kitchen line,
as completely.
As they should be. Completely get it. Almost no way to be locked into feet. Jerk your head and make a clean call on the lines. But we're in the two ref system. Even have a ref sitting down behind the head ref. So maybe we're on a 2.5 ref system or something, whatever. So it's kind of wild. I don't know if they're watching the kitchen line as well, but it seems like they should have a head ref on the kitchen line and then one ref that's always looking at the lines. And I know a lot of these balls are hit quick. You can get blocked. You can be on the far sideline. It's difficult, but there is a lot of pressure on the players to make their own calls, and kind of knowing that the referees rarely overturn is just another factor that allows them to do that. So let's go through the real quick through this, the text message of what they are looking at changing for the rules. So number one, all group stage matches will be played to four games, and the net games, it'll be match win, then it'll be games won, and then it'll go to points instead of just games won to point differential. I think that's great. Yep. Nice job of MLP addressing that. Penalties for multiple calls overruled in a game/match will be implemented. exact details to be determined, but it will be some combination of losing challenges, losing timeouts, and possibly losing points. Great job, MLP. Fantastic there. And then here we go. Number three, premier teams will be able to choose from not only eliminated challenger players, but also on-site alternates during the event. Additionally, premier teams may select an undrafted free agent player from the approved draft pool if a player is injured prior to an event. This may only be done after the challenger team's waiver wire process is over. Okay, so that's just giving some more options for players to fill in. As we know, you cannot put drop and add players in the Premier League because they are already spoken for from a challenger team.
Yeah.
And they're trying to give more options for fill-ins given a variety of situations. And then number four, MLP wants to keep the fire and fist pumping intensity of the team format while upholding the values of sportsmanship. So MLP will address guidelines and boundaries for player and coaches to come on the court during play in between points. I think that's a great job. We saw the fire. We saw the injury. It's palpable down there on the court. But there was an occasional situation where an owner or GM was a little too on the court and maybe even some possible player extended player coaching in between points where they're on the court. So that's great. I think it's an awesome job by them noticing these things and then getting some instant message to the players talking about it, how they're going to do some things in regards to these points.
Yeah, I think it's important because like on that last point with the coaches, family, GMs being on court for these, like I remember it was the fives and they were playing a mixed match that was really important and it went like it went really deep and it was just back and forth. And I remember like the pace of play was so slow. So if we're talking about, you know, needing consistent pace of play with rally scoring for TV, we can't have people on court coaching after every single point. Like, I mean, the pace of play was so slow based on, you know, that hoopla after every single point. It's like, we got to keep it moving. You know, if you have a timeout, call it, you know, if you need to coach, but let's keep the pace of play going.
No, definitely. So, yeah, so that's great that they're addressing that and they notice that. They always send out a survey, and I don't think they've even done that yet. So they sent out this message before even having the survey. They knew it was a point of emphasis, so that's great. Robert, so would you like to talk about the Utah Black Diamond situation?
Sure, Adam.
Okay.
You want to lead me into it?
Sure. So basically what happened, guys, is the Brooklyn Aces were playing the Utah Black Diamonds, and I believe it was Rob Cassidy and Olivia McMillan versus Greg Dow and Corinne Carr in this specific match.
Greg Dow
CGL. Okay, it was CGL. Sierra Guyton Leach. And basically what happened was earlier in that match, I believe the Brooklyn Aces made a call and used their own challenge on their own call. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a – so We thought there might be an out ball, but we called it in. So we challenged our end call just to make sure, just to be, you know, fair.
Gotcha.
And the ball was in, so we're glad we did it, right? And didn't call the ball out.
Right.
But we lost our challenge for that.
Right. Okay. And so later in the match, Greg Dow had a overhead. Both players from the Black Diamonds were back at the baseline and he ripped an overhead. Turned out on replay, it was just inside the line. Rob Cassidy called that ball out. He's looking down on it. Tough call for Rob. And then Rob, within a handful of seconds, says, okay, I want to challenge my own call. And there was some slight discussion about that. Seemed like some players on the team wanted to make that call and use their own challenge against the call. And what the rules set up from MLP, that decision goes to the team captain of the team. So it doesn't matter what the other players want. It's the team captain's choice whether to allow their team to challenge their own call or just scrap it. And there will be no challenge because you'll use your challenge earlier in the match. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So basically what happened was Michelle Escobel was the team captain, and she decided that she does not want to challenge the call. They're going to play it as is. And a couple points later, you guys end up losing that match. What are your thoughts about that specific situation, Robert?
No, so we lost the match on that call. So it was
That was match point.
It was 2017. So we win that point. We get to 18 and we go to side out scoring, which is a big deal. Versus 2017, it's an out call, game over. We're down 2-1. And then, you know, climbing an uphill battle to knot it up at 2. But yeah, so right when it happened, Cassidy's like, I saw it out, but of course we'll challenge it. I'll challenge my own call. All good. So then at that point, I just kind of sat down and was like, okay, cool. They're going to, you know, we'll challenge it. I saw like from the guys, they were like, yeah, it was way in. So I was like, okay, cool. So it'll be 2018. We'll move forward here and keep fighting. And hopefully we can claw our way back and try to get a W here because we need it. And after a while, Courtney Johnson is like, what's going on? Are you guys, is there a challenge? And I'm like, yeah, they said that they're challenging it. They said that. So let's get moving. And then, Michelle just jumps on court and starts warming up. I'm like, what, what's happening? Why are you warming up for your match when this match isn't over? And, then I go talk to her like, Michelle, what's going on? Like, you're challenging her. And she just flips out and like starts yelling at the ref saying, I told you not to let them talk to me. I'm like, what? Excuse me? I'm just, what?
That was for you guys, meaning her opposing players. Her.
Yeah, she's like,
okay.
Like, she wouldn't even talk to me. She was like, I asked her a question, like, what's going on? I thought you're going to challenge this call. It was in, Michelle. Just like, I know you don't want to win like that. And then she flips out on the ref going, I told you not to let them talk to me, like talking about me. I'm like, what? Like, okay. And then, there's this big, you know, hoopla. Michelle wouldn't challenge it. Connor Pardo's there as the team owner. And towards the end, like when all this stuff calmed down and they decided not to challenge, Connor's like, I wanted to challenge, but now it's too late. I wanted to challenge. But come on, dude. If you wanted a challenge, you would have told Michelle, like, Michelle, that was then. Let's do this the right way. You need to challenge it. I'm the team owner. You're the captain. Yes, but you need to challenge this call because we got to do this the right way. And she refused. And, you know, if Connor wanted to do that, I think he could have done that. He didn't do that, which is disappointing, right? You're a team owner. You're the commissioner of the PPA. I believe that's this title. And in my eyes, it's just a really bad look.
No, gotcha. And I don't really know any of the details with the owner, the other players. I saw the Rob Cassidy say he wanted to challenge it, but I was just kind of informed of the rules, which as a coach, GM, and commentator, I probably should have known.
Adam, here's the deal with this rule. I think it's nonsense because it's not consistent. Like I can't name one other challenge throughout the whole event where it had to have team captain approval.
Right.
No, the player on the player on the court wants to challenge it. They tell the ref they want to challenge it. It goes to video review right away.
Sure.
Not one of these other calls had to go through a team captain.
The
ref didn't ask the team captain. The player on the court challenges it. They send it to the booth. It's a challenge. Like, I didn't see one other instance where it had to go to a team captain for approval. And it was weird that it had to do that in this instance. And I also just think it's a silly rule. Like, the player on the court wants to challenge their call. Challenge the call. Why does that need to go to a team captain for approval?
Right. Yeah, so, no, just maybe that's another kink. Maybe they'll address that. It wasn't in the text message. But no, that's a tough situation. And yeah, it's not a great look. Being a father to be, I wanted to have a couple choice words with Michelle that weekend, and I decided against it. I think that was a good decision. Unfortunately, not the first time she's made a questionable decision in terms of that kind of stuff towards her fellow competitors. And, you know, maybe there you go. Perfect little coffee mug there. So, I think I'll probably just stop there. There was another instance in Atlanta Metro last year, and you know, it's just tough and it's too bad. And I just kind of thought, being a veteran, a game playing with and against these players constantly, that, you know, maybe she would rise above and make a better decision. And I don't think she did in either instance. So that's too bad. I would very, very much gladly say that right to her face, not as a keyboard warrior like I'm doing right now, the scene. But it's just really, it's really tough, Rob. I don't love it, and it's just too bad.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that if they do challenge that call, that is going to change the outcome of the match. But I will say that, like, before our mixed match, you know, I played with Corinne, and I mean, she needed to take a break because she was crying, and she went to like the VIP tent just to get a moment, try to collect herself, and then came on court and was still crying at the start of the match. And that's no way to start a match where, you know, you need to win. So it was a really tough spot to be in. I felt so bad for her. I wish I could go back and play better in that match to get the win and pick her up, but you know, it's not how it went. And yeah, like you said, it's just an unfortunate situation and disappointing in a lot of senses, but it happened and it is what it is. So
And let's be clear. Corinne is an emotional, hormonal pregnant lady now.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you right now, if that's an isolated event and that's the only thing that has happened between those two, I think Corinne just says, and starts playing. And unfortunately it is not. There has very, very, very much been on-court issues between Michelle and her throughout the last couple of years, with a couple pretty heavy instances of, you know, what I would consider unfortunate behavior. So anyway, that's what it was. It was a tough spot. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get that cleaned up and maybe a rule in place to make the players on court have as much power as the team captain in that situation. Go ahead, Rob. I can tell.
I've got a great note on this, and it's something that other pro sports leagues implement, because you know, at that juncture in a game, it's incredibly important, right? To get the call right, regardless of like whether the player wants to challenge. I think once you get to kind of that 20 spot, or maybe even a little bit before, maybe it's a combined number of points. Maybe it's a combined number of, you know, if the game's at 35 points plus, you know, there's, you know, it goes to refs can choose to challenge it themselves, right? It goes to video review based on the juncture in the game versus having to rely on a player to do it, because the most important thing here is actually getting the call right. That's the most important thing. So just going to like an official review and have them do it, because it's an important juncture in the game. There's a lot of money on the line. I feel like that's an important thing that they should look at and consider doing, because just because you're out of a challenge doesn't mean you should get the call. They should get the call wrong at the end of the game.
Right. Don't they have something where it's like it goes to a booth challenge on a 2-minute warning or something like that for football, I think. So yeah. I think that's a similar situation to what you're talking about.
Because you don't want to have the wrong call at that point in the game. You want to have the right call.
Totally. So yeah, that makes sense. I have no doubt they'll get it situated, and they've been talking about that, the MLP higher ups. So one last thing before we get into some specific player and team performances, Rob, I know you have mentioned this a couple times, but we saw a variety of kind of elements come into play for this event. We had, while it cleared out in the afternoon, we had some early matches with some shadows and some light on the main court. We had some wind issues as well. It wasn't consistent. It kind of was quiet in the morning, kind of picked up in the afternoon. And we also had some issues with the cold, not issues, but some cold ball affecting play, affecting game styles. I know that you have been a proponent in the past of making pickleball a little more frequently indoor sport. Do you think that would have cleaned up some of the issues and maybe given a better product to casual fans, some cleaner points, less easy mistakes, and you know, kind of more winning the point exchanges, winners as opposed to errors? What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm a big proponent of pickleball being indoors. I think it's a cleaner product. It's, you know, like there's some funny memes on Instagram, like the Challenger League, right? And it was the first day, like what we played on Thursday, and that's when the conditions were by far the worst. It was very windy. It was cold. It was like the ball was really swirling, and you saw people like you saw full on whiffs, right? Like it's not good pickleball, and it's not even necessarily like real pickleball, like where you're judging things based on skill. It's just like whoever can out hack it that day. So we already see kind of craziness with MLP with rally scoring. You have a lot more upsets with the freeze. The better team doesn't always win in one game to 21. Like, I think we see that all the time. And to have even more kind of variables and chaos thrown in with the weather is just, it's getting to the point where it's like, it's not a great look, in my opinion. And I think if it is indoors, you know, nothing changes. You'll still have great pickleball. You'll still have insane excitement. I think the environment and atmosphere is probably even going to be better if you have a good stadium court indoors, like, cause it's so loud and the cheering's even louder. The ball echoing's even louder. Like, I love that. I thought Columbus was great. I think there's some things you clean up and make the stands a bit bigger and more intimate and that kind of thing. But I think indoor pickleball is where it should be. I think it eliminates a lot of factors for broadcast as well. Like, you know, let's say MLPs at same two or three venues a year, you know exactly where the camera should be, you know exactly how to shoot it. It's more consistent. I think there's a lot of positives about going all indoors. You know, maybe not for all the tournaments, but for MLP especially, I think it's a great move. And I think it's a better product and it's cleaner pickleball and it's just a better viewing experience and a better playing experience. Because I tell you what, it's not very fun to play in that as a player either.
All right. Break it down, Robert. Well said. So I think that is about all I have in terms of just general MLP stuff. We'll talk a little more specifically about some of the players and teams. We'll just start off with the Challenger League winners, the Bay Area Breakers. That team consisted of Christian Alshon, Pablo Tellez, Rachel Summers, and Eva Radzikowska. And I thought that this on paper was very much a high-risk, high-reward team. You had some very much unknowns, pretty much three unknowns in Pablo. So Christian, he's a nice self-promoter. He's been playing for a few months now. Rachel Summers, very much a part-time player, very serious with her med school and some life stuff going on, being an army in the Army as well. And then Eva Radzikowska, who's only played a handful of APPs, known more of a singles player. And I'll tell you what, it absolutely panned out for this squad. Eva Radzikowska played like a veteran. I thought her decision-making was phenomenal. Even some of the soft stuff that you don't see from a newer doubles player. Rachel Summers was one of my pick-to-clicks in terms of like a value play to get at the end of the draft. No one knows much about her. I've only seen her at a next-gen series against some lesser competition. And then you have, of course, Alshon, who has all the athleticism in the world, but you know, definitely not a large sample size of results in some of the soft stuff. Tell me a little bit about the Breakers and what you thought of them going into the tournament and what you thought of them after the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I didn't think Alshon was a big question mark per se. I kind of, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get these guys coming in from tennis, like you're going to have a good mixed player right out of the gate, pretty much. And obviously a good singles player. Doubles was a question mark, but he seemed to be solid enough, right? The big question mark on that team on paper, I think, was Rachel and Eva, and they played fantastic. They stepped up, and you know, it was a big, you know, they upside play. I know you were high on Rachel before. You said I think she smoked everybody in the next gen, so it was hard to say how good she was going to be. But she definitely held up and did more than hold up. You know, was super clutch and super consistent. And you know, Eva had some great singles results already, but maybe not a lot of good doubles results. And again, it looks like she made a big leap forward in terms of doubles and was really consistent and good decision making, like you said. And yeah, it all just came together for them. And yeah, big props to the Breakers.
Yeah, well drafted by the Breakers. We'll see how they come out as a slightly more known commodity in this second one, and that's always a factor. You know, you're a high upside team with a little teeny bit of expectations. You win the tournament, you come in, you got a couple months to think about it. You got some expectations on social media and your friends, and then you come out. We'll see how they respond in that next tournament. But either way, phenomenal job by the Bay Area Breakers, kind of harnessing that upside and some of the uncertainty and playing big on the court. A couple things about the Premier. You know, we talked multiple times about some of the higher draft picks, and that creates a little bit of a weaker back end of the draft. And then the more solid teams that, say, drafted in the 8 to 12 spot, and then they had a much quicker pick in that fourth round. So they're a little tighter. As we saw, one of those teams was the winner, the Los Angeles Mad Drops. They had Catherine Parento, Irina Tereshchenko, Thomas Wilson, and Julian Arnold. So I believe that that is a incredibly balanced, solid roster with nothing maybe earth-shattering coming off the page. No early picks as well. So awesome job by them. They only lost one game throughout the entire tournament.
Wild, yeah.
And Julian Arnold, as I said on the broadcast, very much a high-risk, high-reward player. Has he reached a new level, or did we just see him playing great in the moment, using the energy, and just playing hot for this particular tournament? I have no idea, but either way, LA Mad Drops, well played.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely certain players that are suited for MLP-style play over tournament play. Where the moment's bigger, the crowd's bigger, people are watching, the energy, like the energy you have feeds off the crowd and it comes back and you're stoked. I think Rafa Hewitt's a big, player like that. I think Julian's a big player like that. And I think, moving forward and looking at draft picks and how to draft teams, I think energy, honestly, is probably underrated. I think energy is right up there with singles ability in terms of looking at, can they play all three events? Do they have great energy? Because looking at our team, that I feel like that was a big hole for us, is we didn't come out with a ton of positive energy. Like, we were kind of flat-footed a lot. We got into big holes early, and it was tough to climb out of them. And I think if you have that energy out of the gate, it's less of an issue because you're really focused and locked in and dialed in from the get. So, when I'm looking at, team construction moving forward, I think team energy, player energy and team energy and chemistry as a whole, is a really, really big deal and probably undervalued right now.
Yeah. Well said. I mean, when we talk about the different energy from the crowd, I mean, that's a tool at your disposal. If you just treat it like another tournament, or you don't ride that wave or use it to energize you and kind of take you to that next level, you got to use every tool that you have at your disposal. And I think that not only the energy, but the team chemistry, very important as well. You have a handful of players that are just treating it like another one. They get down, you can kind of see it. And then you have those team players that you can plug them with whoever. Their focus never wanes. It stays locked in. And that's really contagious. You even saw some of it in the interviews with the team. If Julian's getting Andiamo-ing second point, you got Elise Jones falling on the ground as a teammate. You like see that and you reevaluate. Am I putting the right amount of effort into this? These guys are getting fired up from point one. They're sacrificing their body. So when you have that, they call infectious energy, and you can use that as a tool for yourself. You got to use everything at your disposal. Everyone's too good. If you're just playing at a regular energy level, you're a step behind. So
please do the Julian Arnold impression.
What did I do?
I don't know what it is. Let's beat them with. Let's beat them with.
Oh, beat them with energy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's right. That's right. So I still remember I think it was somewhere in California. I didn't know anything about Julian Arnold, and it was Hayden Patricwin. He was playing with Hayden Patricwin, and, Hayden's a cool customer, very chill, very relaxed, always wearing his shades. I didn't know anything about Julian. He missed probably three or four shots, pretty standard shots. He comes back to the baseline. He starts doing these big box jumps, as high as he can go. He just stares deep into Hayden's eyes and he goes, "Hayden, let's just beat him with energy." Just like that. And I was like, who is this psychopath? I have no idea what's going on. He gave him the crazy eyes. This was like second round of the back draw or something like that. So incredible stuff. And you saw the energy. And I tell you what, he got in a couple barking matches, one specifically with Travis Rettenmeier.
Yep.
Didn't back down and didn't affect his game. Some people play better when they're jacked up, some people play worse. And I definitely think any form of energy, positive or negative, going through Julian Arnold is a bonus for him and makes 100%. Him play at a higher level. So he's the MVP. He earned it. You can't take anything away from him. Phenomenal job by Julian Arnold as a third round pick, becoming the MVP of the league.
100%.
Yeah.
What else we got, Adam?
That's pretty close to it. So we hit that magical number of over 1 hour. We had a couple a little short break in there. We could have maybe dug a little deeper on some of the specifics of the team, but with so much just general info about MLP, I think we I think we nailed it pretty good on this one. And
next event is what, March? March 23rd or something like that?
Correct. So end of March of that, I believe that's Holly Hill, Florida. Is that correct?
Yep.
They have a new facility Daytona. Down there.
Yep.
Right. So I have not seen that facility. I've heard good things about it. Lots of courts, and I don't see why the energy wouldn't be the exact same, if not better, for MLP number two.
Yeah. And we'll see, like, you know, we talked about a lot of, you know, mishaps per se and other things that could be, you know, shored up, cleaned up, and we'll see if they do it. You know, I think that text they sent out, we haven't done the player survey yet, but the text they sent out shows that they're, you know, they want to make this the best possible. They want to make it a great product. So I'm sure they'll clean things up, and it's only going to get better, man. Like, I think this one was better than last year, and I think it's going to continue to trend that way.
Yeah, we talked so much previously on episodes of It Feels Right that this came together quick. So tons of respect to the crew at MLP. I wasn't the absolute perfect situation, but like you said, they're doing everything in their power to fix it. Things came together quick. So to make this first event so great and so much better than last year, kudos to them, and no doubt events two and three. And then, of course, the second half of the season will continue to get better. Very exciting stuff. I honestly can't wait for the next MLP as there's nothing else like it.
Well, you just nailed that tagline a few times. Well done, Adam. It's almost like you're employed by them.
Yeah, almost like I'm employed by them. So exactly right. So good stuff, Robert.
Yes, we'll
be back either. I'm sure we'll be back early next week.
Yes, we will.
With a possible guest. We've had a couple guests in a row, so this was nice just to shoot the shit with you and talk always about these tournaments.
Thank you for cussing and making me feel better for my early F-bomb that I'm not.
I'm pregnant with Corinne.
Yes, you are.
You know, yeah. I mean, I'm emotional support. I knew you slipped. You slipped early in
thank
the episode,
you.
So I dropped an S-bomb to counteract your F-bomb, and
thank
this
you.
Is what I do. I'm a good partner. What can I say?
You are a good partner, and our on-air chemistry is just palpable.
Palpable. That's right. Have a good day, Robert, in Savannah, Georgia, you incredible nomad.
Thank you, Adam. You have a good day as a house husband.
Oh, I will.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.